Welcome to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. It's great to have you along. We're on Twitter all this hour at KUOW, and you might want to use it because we are talking about your future here if you're in the city of Seattle or work there or care about the city of Seattle. So here you are, a good citizen. You do your part to make Seattle a better place, to tell the politicians where you stand. And then what? Will Seattle make the changes you want? Will it protect what you love? This hour, we are talking about the future of this city with two people who would like to shape that future. Mayoral candidates Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon are here with Election Day 22 days away. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Terrific to be here. Thank you.
You are asking voters to put you in charge of Seattle for 4 years. So I thought we'd talk about how you envision our lives here by the end of your term. What's going to change? What's going to stay the same? And it's natural to start with the word expensive. San Franciscans have talked and talked and talked about affordability, but guess what? They're still unaffordable. So Jenny Durkin, I'll start with you. Realistically, will Seattle be at least as hard to afford 4 years from now, if you're mayor, when you're done being mayor your first term, will it be just as hard to afford as it is now?
I hope within 4 years we actually have turned the dial some and that Seattle's not only more affordable, but more welcoming in every part of the city for people. People really can't afford to live in Seattle. They can't afford to get in if they're just coming. And if they're from Seattle or been here for a while, they can't afford to stay. Things have gotten so expensive.
And you think that'll materially change? We'll have a different conversation in 4 years?
I think we will. I don't think it'll be solved, and no one should pretend that we can solve this issue in 4 years. But I think we can make a real difference. And more importantly, I think these next 4 years are as much about what will Seattle be like for the next generation. We literally are rebuilding this city. How are we going to build it for the next generation? How can we envision it? How can it be that cool, eclectic city in the future that protects all the things we love?
Okay, and we'll get to more about cool. Just before we hear from Carrie Moon, I want to hear what you plan to do about that first question, the expensive question. What can you do about it, Jenny Durkin?
There are two things we have to do. One is we have to get more affordable housing as quickly as we can everywhere in this city, and not just low-income housing, but that missing middle. The second thing we have to do is really change how our economy works. The prosperity that Seattle has been enjoying in the last 5 years is not shared prosperity. We have to have real economic empowerment, particularly in South Seattle and for the kids coming through our schools. We want our kids to be able to fill every job in this city, whether it is running the companies that are going to be great here or whether it's building the buildings that are going to house those companies. And right now, we're importing that talent we shouldn't be.
Okay, affordable housing, change the economy. We shouldn't be importing that talent. Carrie Moon, do you agree that realistically, in 4 years, after the first 4 years of the Moon mayorship, that this city could be materially more affordable, or are these forces beyond our control?
There are big forces out there, but this city could materially be more affordable if we tackle this problem at its root. I entered the mayor's race not with a list of problems, which everybody understands, but with a bold action plan of concrete solutions, because this is important and it's complicated. So I put forward a real platform of how to tackle the affordability crisis. And the first thing we have to do is we have to stop the speculation that is increasing our prices so rapidly. This is not natural. It's not normal for housing prices to be rising this quickly. There's something happening in our housing market.
How do you stop speculation?
We have to put a disincentive on the activity. Right now, our housing is the hottest stock out there. It's better than anything you can buy on Wall Street. If you have wealth, it's easier to purchase a home in Seattle and flip it in a year or two and make those returns because you're helping escalate the prices by piling on. We've got to make this less attractive by putting in a disincentive, whether it's something you can do at the sale or whether it's something you do at the back end with a capital gains tax on the proceeds of selling a non-primary residence. This is only for folks who are playing in our market as a commodity, not for folks who want to live and work here. I want to make a clear distinction. So some sort of disincentive that makes this a less attractive investment, because we need to preserve our housing stock for people who want to live and work here.
If you buy something expensive, you hope that it's going to at least retain its value, or even better, if it increases its value. What's wrong with I mean, a big purchase is speculative. What's wrong with wanting to profit from buying something,
because
right? Even if it's a house?
Housing should be reserved for people who want to live and work here. It should not be treated like a commodity, because the more outside players from Wall Street or sovereign wealth funds are coming in to buy up our housing, the less housing is available for folks who want to live here. And with our growth that's happening right now, we cannot afford to have that extra demand. We have enough demand already, just natural demand of folks who want to buy houses. So we've got to block the activity, reserve our housing for people who want to live here. We also have to do a lot more nonprofit and public housing that's permanently affordable. And we also have to tackle the missing middle. These are all solutions. We need all of them in place at the same time. There's not one silver bullet, but we need to do all of them. So I will focus on all the solutions for housing in my first year and make a big difference.
One of our listeners has a solution, has an idea. We were just talking about cracking down on speculation. We've talked about needing more affordable housing. John writes on Facebook, now that we've got a $15 minimum wage, but growing or record shares of people, disabled, unemployed, long-term, or temp contact, gig economy workers not covered by that, do you support a guaranteed basic income for all Seattleites? Jenny Durkin?
I think we're going to move to a basic income in the country just because of the way the economy is working. But I think we have to be very careful about how we do that. But I'm going to go back to something, if I may, just that Carrie said that I think is important to lay down there. I think that there is some data suggest that there is some speculation in our market. But it is wrong to suggest that what's going on in the market and what's driving prices is a runaway speculation. The number one thing driving the unaffordability of Seattle is math. We've had too many people moving here who have two well-paying jobs. I was just talking to a tech worker last week who was something like number 13,000 Amazon employee. They're now up to 50,000. When you have 40,000 people earning over $100,000 a year moving into a city in a three-year period, supply and demand shows that you're going to have increased market rates. That okay. doesn't mean there's no speculation, but but it means that if the solution is just hit speculation, we will never get to be an affordable city.
Carrie Moon, you're shaking your head. You're saying math doesn't explain this.
First of all, I never said speculation is the only solution. I said we have to hit this at all levels, and it's a broad array of tools that we need to use. Second, this sort of supply and demand applied to the housing market has failed. Look at what happened in Vancouver. Look at what's going on in London, Sydney, New York. Most of the world-class cities are dealing with this condition of global investment commodifying the housing market and driving up demand. Yes, we have some demand from people growing here, but that's a level of demand we could keep up with if we were continuing to out housing affordable to folks at income levels. But having speculation at the top end of the market, or even at the bottom end, there are still private equity firms buying up starter homes to take them out of circulation and use them for rental-backed securities. It's happening at the top and the bottom of the market, so that escalates prices at all levels. So Jenny has a very neoliberal trickle-down, the market will solve all the problems approach to housing, and I can show you countless examples of that simply not working. This is deeper and more complex because finance is playing in our market, and we've got to look at those additional factors and understand the complexity of this challenge.
You're both agreeing on the need to add more housing, which makes some single-family house owners makes the hair go up on the back of the neck. Seattle has so long been remarkable for having so many single-family homes. Jenny Durkin, does that need to materially change? Do we need to become less of a single-family house city and more of a multifamily?
I want to answer that, but I want to go back and make very clear, I have never advocated for trickle-down economics in the housing market. What I'm responding to is every time we talk about affordability, the first place that Carrie talks about is speculation. I don't deny there's some speculation, but it is not the primary driver of the lack of affordability in Seattle. It's just not. And so that solution is not going to move the dial on affordability. And I think it's really important for people to know that.
Okay. So we discussed that. I just before, and we're going to leave housing in a way in a moment, but I just want to talk about some people are saying Seattle is selling out, selling its soul. Which it partly includes the old craftsmen going away and big apartment buildings popping up. You know all of this well. What do you have to say to a single family home dweller who sees the city they love changing in a terrible way?
So HALA had 65 different ideas in it, and there's also really good ideas that are not in HALA. We got fixated on the mandatory housing affordability upzones, which are threatening to neighborhoods, and I understand why. Because if we don't look at all the other tools and we are just focusing on incentivizing developers to come in and tear down existing housing to put in, you know, more dense housing, we are at risk of losing character. So we need to have the conversation with neighborhoods about, here's how much our city's growing, here's how much we expect your neighborhood to accommodate, here are all the tools we could use to accommodate that growth, what works best for you. And then we can go back to what we did in neighborhood planning, where the city and the neighborhoods work together to figure out strategies that both prevent displacement and gentrification, but also accommodate growth. And that might mean, say, in Finney or in, you know, Fremont, that we might allow backyard cottages, duplexes, triplexes. We might look at row houses. We might look at clustered housing and congregate housing. Let's look at all the tools. If it's important to preserve craftsman homes and the character of the neighborhood, the physical built environment, let's look at solutions that are more gentle infill development that keep ownership in the neighborhood. Because the more we have outside ownership of housing, the more we are losing this wealth generating capacity that housing has offered for people for so many years.
Jenny, any difference between the two of you there?
Yeah, I think that a big difference is when we talk about single family neighborhoods, you know, the HALA, which is the Housing Affordability and Livability Agenda, it posits that 65%-ish of our area in the city is locked up in single family. So people hear that number and they say that's way too much and it's too exclusive. But what they don't realize, the little footnote to that, is that number includes all of our parks. Discovery Park, Magnuson Park, Seward Park. You pull the parkland out of that, and the calculation is roughly it's around 33% to 35% of our city is in single-family zoning. So we need to keep that in mind as we're proposing solutions. We need to have all types of housing, and so everything is going to get more dense. We're growing as a city. No one can avoid that, but we've got to figure out how to work with neighborhoods to build that density in a way that makes sense and how to focus first on those urban village cores and build out density, and then how to go to neighborhoods and, for example, make it easier to get a mother-in-law apartment or a backyard cottage. I've had friends who've been trying to permit mother-in-laws for 18 months. It's expensive, it takes too long. But if you really made real backyard cottages and not the monstrosities that everyone's afraid of, you could turn a single family lot into a triplex almost, because if they had a little backyard cottage and a mother-in-law, so when you're older, you can move to the cottage, rent out your house, or your kids can move into the house with their kids.
Okay. All those people need to move around. So let's talk about traffic. By the way, I'm talking with Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon, both of whom would like to be mayor for the next 4 years at least. So traffic in 4 years, Carrie Moon, even worse than it is now, right?
Unfortunately, unless we get solutions in place really quickly, it could get worse because there's a lot of projects coming online in the next few years. And this is already a crisis. So I have a friend who lives in the southern part of West Seattle. If she's not on the bus by 7 a.m., she watches bus after bus go by without even stopping because they're full. We simply have to have more transit service. We have to have focus on pedestrians, bikes, and transit, because the only way we're going to accommodate all the trips that we are have now and are coming in the future is to make sure that we are using our street space as efficiently as possible. So that means making it easier and safer to walk with sidewalk improvements and Vision Zero kind of strategies. It means having bus priority and bus only lanes. Excuse me. And it means a full network of protected bike lanes so that folks who are little bit less skillful in riding a bike feel safe and secure and know they're going to get all the way to their destination on their bike. So we've got to be able to make those modes work better for folks, and that's the only way we're going to accommodate all the trips we need to take with the existing streets space we have. I also have ideas about sound transit, but we can talk about that later.
Okay. Jenny Durkin, transit, bicycles, pedestrians, cars not on that list. Obviously, they're the big car-sized elephant in the room. What do you say about the next 4 years of the Durkin administration? Traffic's going to get worse. Do you agree?
Traffic's going to get worse. And I've said in many forums, traffic's going to get worse, and it won't be the mayor's fault. We really have, with the convention center getting built, all the buses are going to be on the street. We have all the people still commuting in. We've got First Avenue that's going to be dug up, the ferry dock. They're taking down the viaduct. It really is going to be terrible, but it gives us an opportunity because it gives us a chance to be really innovative and come up with some better solutions.
What's an innovation?
One thing is we know we got to get to a future with fewer single occupancy vehicles for our climate goals, for our traffic goals, for what we want to be as a city.
So, how can we do that? People like to do what they like to do.
So they do like to do what they like to do. But one thing I've talked about is I want to go to major employers, Amazon, Starbucks. If I'm the mayor, we'll do it as the city. And stagger work times. Have more people telecommute. So on Monday, 20% stay home. On Tuesday, 20% stay home. Really have fewer people coming in.
Do you incentivize those big companies to do that? Penalize them if they don't?
I think you can incentivize them and bring them as partners. Because they, you know, it's not good for them if their employees are sitting in traffic. They're not productive. I think the second thing you can do is we've got to make transit better and buses better. And I put out specific proposals. People can go to the website to see how we add more buses and pay for it, how we get transit sped up. Because what we really want to do is get people out of cars, walking, on their bikes, in carpools, on buses, in transit.
A lot of agreement there, right, Carrie?
Well, I'd just like to point out that I have helped the city on solutions to this challenge for a decade. I helped develop the Urban Mobility Plan in 2007-2008, which was exactly focused on this issue. How do we build more capacity and access to move folks in downtown? And most recently, I was an advisor to the One Center City strategy that not only addressed the problems like my opponent is addressing, but came up with solutions for how do we accommodate the growth in trips on limited downtown streets. So I have deep expertise working with SDOT and all the transit agencies on implementing real solutions, and I will hit the ground running, ready to go.
The waterfront tunnel will open to traffic on your watch, right? In the next couple years, something like that. You opposed that tunnel, Carrie Moon. Will most Seattleites regret that tunnel in the first Moon term?
No, maybe. I don't know. It's done. You know, there's no questioning it at this point. But I think a couple things are still unresolved. Number one, you know, most of the trips on the viaduct are coming in and out of downtown Seattle, and the tunnel has done nothing to serve those trips. The solution that we were proposing via the Urban Mobility Plan was all about serving the trips of people coming and going into downtown Seattle. So when the tunnel opens, we are going to find extreme traffic congestion at both at 6th and Mercer at one end of the tunnel and at Pioneer Square at the other end of the tunnel. And I think people have no idea how much additional congestion is going to be caused there. Second, they have not announced yet how high the tolls will be. They are planning on somewhere between $1 toll to $5 toll at peak period. If it's a $5 toll, which is what they actually need to get the funding that they promised to get from tolling, that's going to push more and more of the trips out onto city streets. So this could be quite a disaster when we try to accommodate that many more trips of folks avoiding the tunnel toll.
Carrie Moon and Jenny Durkin, two candidates to be the mayor of Seattle with Election Day 22 days away. We have lots of listener questions. Shauna wants to know on Facebook, both candidates, this is Shauna writing, both candidates have children in private school, which is, of course, your right and your choice, but it takes away from your down with the people's argument when you're not doing the one thing that we know is proven to help everybody. This is Shauna, I see this as a continuation of political lip service, but not following through with behavior. Carrie Moon and Jenny Durkin will answer that objection after we take a break on KUOW. Back in just a moment. And we're back with the two Seattle mayoral candidates, Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon. I just asked both of you, basically Shauna's saying if you've got kids in private school, you cannot be down with the people. What do you say, Carrie Moon?
So my kids were in public school for 8 years. I was intending to keep kids in public school the whole time because I believe in the public school system. We got to a point, though, where what was on offer did not meet our needs as a family. And it's a little, there's some privacy issues, so I want to be careful here. I'm just trying to protect my kids' privacy. But what we were offered did not meet our needs. And we could have gone across the Ship Canal 4 times a day in a car-free family to try to get to the school in Wallingford we were offered, or pick a more convenient choice of going to private school. And it might.
But do you even have regrets? Do you even agree with Shauna that you're part of the problem because of that choice?
Well, until we work together to change our school system, which I have been doing, I'm endorsed by SEA. I've been standing up for getting McCleary funding, fully funding our schools. I marched with the teachers on their march 2 years ago. I've done a lot to help. But until we get this problem solved, families like me that are not having their needs met by the school system, those who have the means to go leave. And it's not fair. I don't like it. I have mixed feelings to this day about that choice. But given what our families' needs were, we were kind of pushed into it.
Jenny Durkin, kids in private school, is that a problem?
I don't think it's a problem. I think I've had the great privilege to be able to do that and was the best fit for my kids. But it does not reduce my commitment to the public schools. You know, in between college and law school, I was a high school English teacher for 2 years. I've seen how hard it is to teach kids and been in and out of the schools in Seattle for decades here. And that's why I have very specific plans on how we reinvest in our schools in Seattle, because they really are our future. So I have a whole plan starting with good early learning programs, how we tackle the opportunity gap, how we make sure that we give equal opportunity apprenticeship programs. And then I proposed also that every graduate of a Seattle public school will get 2 years free tuition to community college. So they know that door is open to them.
Okay. So you don't buy Shauna's premise that this is a political lip service, but not following through with behaviors. And I have a related question from Seth on Facebook, who says, why is any rich white lady the right choice for Seattle at this moment?
So one more thing about schools, that the closing the opportunity gap and investing in the students who are most disadvantaged and using a racial equity lens to make sure we are investing the family education levy money appropriately is something that I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from SPS, from the union, from community groups, from schools. People understand that my commitment to the schools is true. And unlike my opponent, I'm not going to take money out of the families and education levy, which is intended K-12, and spend it on college, because there are already other programs for college tuition, and we need to be focusing this money on the K-12 programs that it was designed for.
Okay, Jenny Durkin, is Seth's rich white lady characterization fair, frustrating? What do you say?
First, not going to rob the education levy for college. If you look at the website, folks, we've got multiple ways we can pay for it. Just want to make that clear. I think that the important thing people should be looking at is, what do we want to do for Seattle? And the fact that I'm a white woman with wealth, the real question is, what will she do as mayor? And you know what I'll do as mayor, because what I've done in my career,
okay,
30 years in the city.
And we have been, and we'll be talking about all that. I just want to get your take on, as Seth says, rich white lady. Do you agree that that's beside the point, Carrie?
I believe Seth is partly right. We have got to change who has power in this city. The more I've been involved in this campaign, and the more I see how policy is devised by and for a very small group of interests who believe they have the right to run this town and exclude everybody else, changing power is essential to fixing these problems. And so I have spent the last 20 years in service to this city. I have worked with, you know, social justice groups and with groups focused on racial equity. I know changing power is a big part of the solution, but we also need to focus on who has the skills and who understands how to change, how we make decisions, and who has understanding of these deep challenges that we're facing and has solutions ready to go. So I am ready to include folks in my administration and share power once I'm in, but because it's absolutely part of the solution.
Okay, and related, Jenny Durkin, Gus on Facebook wants to know, what are you going to do to reverse the effects of systemic racism in Seattle?
We have to do this at every level. And I think first it starts with having an honest conversation that there is systemic racism and it affects all of our institutions, whether it's the schools, the police department, or how employment operates. Second, we have to lean forward. You know, I fought Initiative 200, which was the anti-affirmative action initiative here that passed. Since that time, we had about 20% of public dollars went to minority businesses. That's less than 1% now. And the State Department of Transportation just issued a disparity study showing the businesses hit the hardest were African-American businesses. I have pledged that as mayor, I am going to be very forward-leaning, and we are going to use this economic money, billions of dollars in public spending, and we're going to get as much of that in the pockets of minority businesses as we can. I do not think I-200 is a barrier to that. I think we have been too cowardly on it, and I think we have to change the dial. And then we have to continue to have anti-bias training across government, whether it's in the mayor's office, city offices, and continue particularly to work in the police department for the decades to come on those issues.
We mentioned Amazon a moment ago. Carrie Moon, does Amazon get too much credit or blame for changing Seattle?
Well, you know, they own 20% of the commercial office space in the city, so they are a major player. And I think... You know, they've attracted a lot of great people to work here, and I want to be really clear that I feel like we need to do a better job welcoming the Amazon employees who sometimes feel excluded and misunderstood and treated as outsiders. So I think we need to do a better job of that. But I also think we need to remember that our economy is broad and diverse, and the way it stays healthy and robust and resilient is by staying broad and diverse. So I'm not sorry that Amazon decided to put headquarters to somewhere else. I think it was sensible. I think recognizing the pace at which they're growing is simply too much for one city to accommodate. So they're going to continue to stay here and grow more slowly, but also grow somewhere else. That just feels really sensible. Gives us a chance to catch up with the growth that we've already been having in the past 10 years. So I think we have to be careful about ownership. I think the more we own local business, the more local wealth stays in community. So our city needs to do a much better job focusing on local ownership, local circulation of wealth to build local prosperity. And so the more we chase after the big corporations where most of the profits actually leave our economy, the more we fail. So we need to focus on local business and sustaining that ecosystem.
Jenny Durkin, I saw the Seattle Times obtain this letter signed by most city council members and some state legislators, port commissioners, and others. A letter to Amazon saying that to the extent the company's headquarters decision, wanting a headquarters someplace else, to the extent it was based on Amazon feeling unwelcome in Seattle or not being included in some of our regional decisions, we would like to hit the refresh button. You've heard mixed messages from our community. Do you think Amazon's heard a destructive mixed messages from Seattle, and what would you do differently?
The number one thing that I would do as mayor is try to fix the problems we have, transportation, homelessness, affordability. Because if we do that, we will continue to be that city where people want to come and live. Because if workers want to come and live here, then the companies here will be great. So I think by fixing those problems and having that vision of the future, I mean,
So no refresh button needed, with no mixed messages to Amazon? Have we been business unfriendly?
No, I think that the issue is, what does the refresh look like? And the refresh is, we did not plan our growth well. If we want to be that city in the future that is still the city where we have a growing economy and a diverse economy, we need to fix the systemic problems we have now. And if we fix those problems, I really believe people will continue to want to live in Seattle, be in Seattle, work in Seattle.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to ask you about that. So that is a vision of Seattle, I assume, for example, having more and better transit and growing upward and having more room for people. And so that could attract even more growth. I hear from people who say, I don't want more growth. I like things the way they were. Are you both envisioning greater Seattle?
Yeah, and my answer to the people that, you know, we actually have talked to people about this, and a lot of people say, can't we just take a pause? Can't we just, you know, maybe for 5 or 10 years? That's a dying city. You know, I grew up here.
Dying.
If you quit growing and innovating, you are in danger in this new economy of being left behind. Our economy is changing so rapidly. We are in the midst of a greater economic revolution than the Industrial Revolution. And if we don't figure out the problems we have now and build that city of the future, we will have a problem. I lived here in the 70s when Boeing sneezed and this city emptied out. And we were in devastating economic times. And there's been times, I will tell you, growing up here, that I'd like some people maybe just not, you know, can't we stop? But that's part of who we are as Seattle. We are the city of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to figure out how we build a city that will accommodate that in the future. And squint our eyes, and we are that every part of the city is unique with neighborhoods and good transit. And it's the place that will endure the changes.
Okay, that's Jenny Durkin running for mayor. Carrie Moon's running for mayor. Is that who we are, Greater Seattle? Attract those innovators because you got to keep growing or you're dying.
I think we have to focus on supporting the local innovators who are already here. We don't need to import additional businesses. We need to support the local people right now who are inventing great things, whether they're restaurant, retailers, musician, nightlife, entrepreneurs, space exploration.
Does that mean stay smaller than the Jenny Durkin vision you just
heard? We need to support local homegrown business because that's how you keep wealth in community. We need to support the training we need in our schools so that local kids can get those jobs. But we also need to be really careful about gentrification and displacement because we all see what's happening. We have pushed out low-income communities. We've pushed out artists and musicians. We've pushed out communities of color who simply can no longer afford to live here. They're being forced out into the suburbs. They've lost their connection to community, their lifeline of support with one another, their safety net with one another. They're out in the suburbs having to commute long distances and spend more time away from family. I think we have to work much harder at solutions that help communities grow and thrive in place by the city doing a better job with guiding the growth and making sure that we are working directly with communities on how to build wealth in their community, how to build housing affordable to their community, how to establish places like El Centro de la Raza, where there's a community center, affordable housing, local business, and local services, all in the same area to build that local ecosystem that communities need. So the world Jenny's describing, where it's attract growth at all costs, is I think we need to be more careful than that. We need to do much better planning to make sure we are helping communities thrive in place as we grow.
Can I just... Nowhere in my lexicon ever have I said attract growth at all costs. What I'm saying is we got to fix the problems we have, but we have to envision that world where we continue to have dynamic companies that are grown here. The companies that are grown here locally include Microsoft, Starbucks, Costco, Amazon, Nordstrom. They also include Ethan Stoll's restaurants and Little Tiny Hole in the Walls. We have to have a range of diversity. Our small businesses employ 4 to 5 times the amount of people in Amazon. That's why I've rolled out specific proposals to keep our small businesses healthy, to keep them in this community. But it's not an either-or choice. We can be that diverse and economic diverse city of the future and address the real disparities we have here. And my argument is we can't be that city of the future unless we address the disparities we have today.
Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon both running for mayor of Seattle, election deadline November 7th. That's about 3 weeks away. And this Facebook writer actually sparked maybe more discussion than any single post on our Facebook page. I have a funny but serious question, she writes. Would either of you consider lifting the ban on roosters in Seattle? There is a lot of noise in the city. A rooster is a gentle and wonderful addition, and they serve a purpose on an urban farm. You are welcome to come visit our home to see for yourselves. This sparked quite a discussion. Dogs are loud, and we don't allow them, and I think I'm going to take up the trumpet. So would you like to address or defer the question of roosters in Seattle?
I would be happy to go visit her and have her show me her urban farm and explain her reasoning. I don't keep chickens. I have lived in multifamily housing since I was 18 years old and left my parents' house. So I've never kept chickens. I'd love to learn more and what her arguments are.
Okay. She'd love to learn more. Yes.
And I grew up in Issaquah where there are lots of chickens and roosters. I think they can be good. You just have to make sure they're not the ones that crow every time that there's fireworks off.
Yes, indeed. Okay. how you make sure roosters don't crow is it's probably its own
nothing
reporting
to crow
feature.
About. That's right.
Which reminds me, you know, actually a mayor has big important things to do, and then you have your constituents telling you things that they think are big and important. For example, do you care that dogs run off-leash all over the place in this city? And what do you tell a constituent that wants you to really care and do something about that?
I think our rule...
This is Carrie Moon speaking.
Dogs to stay on leash is a good rule, and I would continue to support that. But you're right, a lot of suggestions come up, and it's been both exciting to see how much energy there is out there, and also just fascinating to see how specific people's perspective and experience of the city is. And it's probably been the most fun part of campaigning, is listening to ideas and seeing how much constructive, positive energy there is in the city. And
I would be daunted by how many people want me to please them. This is fascinating to me. But yes, Jenny Dirk.
I think on the dogs, maybe it's because I've always been a dog owner. I think it's a rule of reason. Dogs can be off the leash, but if they're bothering people or you're in an area where you have a dog that's large and children around, you got to take reasonable steps. Everyone knows our off-leash areas are kind of like these pens of mud, and no one wants that. So we need to have more creative spaces in our park or ours where people can take their dogs and not feel guilty about it.
Separate from pens of mud, which is a fantastic phrase, since we're on lifestyle issues, the last dedicated umbrella store in Seattle is closing. Umbrella or no umbrella, Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon.
Every time I don't want it to rain, I carry an umbrella.
That's Jenny Durkin.
I learned 20 years ago when I first moved here to always have a hat and always wear rubber-soled shoes from October through April, so I'm happy without an umbrella.
Thank you, Carrie Moon. Let's talk about some other things like taxes. You each want to be mayor by in 4 years? Do you think either of you think there will be an enforced city income tax? Carrie,
I'm hoping for a state income tax in 4 years, and here's why. I think the tide is turning. I think everyone understands this system we have now with tax cuts for big corporations, no tax on the wealth that wealthy people earn, in air quotes, by having investments, is simply not providing us enough resources to build the society we know we need. Everybody sees our schools are underfunded, our infrastructure is crumbling, we are not investing in our four-year colleges to build affordable tuition so that four-year degrees are accessible to folks. We know it's failing when we have tax cuts for the wealthy few and austerity for everybody else.
Odds of a state income tax?
It's time. I think we're ready. We were pretty 50, close.
50-50? 70-30?
60% if we do it right. If we focus on what are the resources we need to build a society where every kid can thrive, if we focus on that and what we're going to get, and then we talk about taxes are how we generate the revenue to solve problems together, I think we can get there.
But Seattle income tax in force, what are the odds by the end of the Carrie Moon first term?
You know, I don't know. People say it has a real steep legal challenge, but I think it sparked this conversation, so we have to keep going and look at all the more progressive taxes that we should be doing at both the local and the state level.
Jenny Durkin, income tax, Seattle and Washington State.
We need it. I think
both.
We need a statewide income tax. I'm hopeful that the city income tax is upheld. I was very dubious that it would because of the legal challenges. But if you look at the state Supreme Court case on the ammo tax, it gives broader discretion to cities on taxation than I thought. I do want to address something that Carrie said. I think there is no chance that there's a 65% chance that we will get a state income tax. I mean, I have worked in Olympia for decades on really hard social issues, and you got to put the votes together. And there are not the votes now. That doesn't mean we don't try. We try, we try, we try. We've been pushing this for decades. I think the best shot of getting that is going to be from a citizens initiative, and I think that's the way to go. But we have to build support. The last one was defeated greatly, as we know, and so we have to build the political will behind that. And I think that the problem our schools face in every community may be one of the things that helps us do that.
Yeah, I meant citizens initiative too, and I would
not going
like
to happen from the legislature.
I just want to point out that the high earners income tax in 2010, that was an initiative, passed, I think, 75% in Seattle. And a lot of the funders for the opposition campaign are now funding Jenny Durkan's campaign. So I just want to point that out, that she's going to have a big conflict if she's elected, because a lot of her supporters are against this.
It's actually not true, because I'm also supported by the nurses, the dock workers, the firefighters, the real workers of this city who are supportive of that. So that's, you know, Carrie, that's a little bit of a dodge.
What do you tell your supporters who disagree with you when it comes to an income tax?
I've told them in every room. And, you know, I have the, you know, maybe it's a fault, but I try to say the same thing in every room, whether I'm talking to business people or working people, labor unions, people who are unaffiliated, whatever part of the city it is, I tell them what we need. And our vision is we cannot continue to have the kind of revenues we have. They are regressive, and people that can't afford to pay as much are paying more, and it's simply unfair.
Okay, so you both agree about regressive taxes. There's a lot of agreement in Seattle, and the two of you running agree on a lot of things. Some people call that some people think that there is an echo chamber or a bubble in Seattle. So I want to talk about that and a few other topics, because we've got about less than 15 minutes left with the two people who want to run the city of Seattle. Carrie Moon and Jenny Durkan want to be your mayor, Seattle, Election Day, November 7th. That's about 3 weeks away. Back in just a moment. I'm Bill Radke here with the two candidates for Seattle mayor, Jenny Durkan and Carrie Moon. And a moment ago, we were talking about yet another example of Seattle being all fired up about something. This was a high earner tax that the rest of the state wasn't into. We hear people outside Seattle, especially in eastern Washington, but even beyond, talking about the Seattle bubble. Knute Berger was just writing that Seattle needs an ambassador to help the rest of the state understand us. Are you in lockstep with the city of Seattle, Jenny Durkan? Where has progressive Seattle gone wrong? What's the biggest mistake Seattle has made in your view?
I think the biggest mistake that progressive Seattle could make going forward is to quit being progressive. If you look at what's happening on the national scene, nothing we care about is going to have anything good coming out of the other Washington. And so there is a thirst for leadership right now on everything from climate issues to wage disparity. And Seattle has been that place that has been the laboratory of progressive ideas. And so I think we have to keep moving forward and lead on those issues. It would be a mistake if we cannibalize ourselves in the process and have circular firing squads. But I think that we can pull together and continue to have those kind of progressive movements and ideas that will not only change the national conversation, they can lead the world on issues like climate.
Carrie Moon, where has progressive Seattle gone wrong, if it has?
I think we need to treat people with more respect in Eastern Washington. I grew up in a small town. I understand the desire for a simpler quality of life. And I think often in the city, we treat folks in the rest of the state as if they're rubes, as if they're unsophisticated, as if they're not good people. And I think that's our one mistake. And I do agree with Knute Berger that we do need to have an ambassador and start understanding, listening, and build a shared idea of our mutual interdependence, that we need them as much as they need us, and here's how we can all grow together.
Does that mean Seattle compromises and comes closer to Eastern Washington, or we just convince them how right we were all along?
No, we listen to what they need, and we figure out a way to help them get what they need while we pursue what we need. Because it's very different living in a small town with a small paycheck and a simple quality of life than living in a big, complex city. And I do believe in this time of Trump, when so many good things are being dismantled and scary things are gaining power, that cities have to lead, because cities are the birthplace of democracy. They are its future. They are a place where we can look each other in the eye and commit to supporting the well-being of each other instead of, you know, devolving into these polarized fights where we think the other one is the enemy. So I think we absolutely have to keep leading, show the rest of the country what a city committed to prosperity for everybody, the well-being of everyone, looks like. And we can do that in Seattle because we care about one another, because we're smart, because we're creative, because we believe in innovation and creativity. I think we can do that here in Seattle unlike any place in the country.
Leadership is important, principles, innovation, creativity. You know what else is important? Money. Things adding up. So I want to ask each candidate for mayor, When you total up the cost of all the programs you've proposed, what is the cost in new dollars as opposed to dollars transferred from other budgets? How much more money, Carrie Moon, are you asking for?
I haven't done that calculation. I think
why not?
Because we need to sort out the details. I have put forward ideas. I've put forward proposals. But we need to sit down with community groups, with council, and with the staff in the city team of 11,000 people to identify the most effective, biggest bang for the buck solutions to actually implement. So we need to do that, but we also need to look at, you know, the budget has grown quite a bit, perhaps up to 25% if Mike McGinn's numbers were right, in the past 4 years. So we have to look at what have we been spending this additional money on, what's working that we can scale up, what's not working that we need to shut down.
And But 22 days before the election, isn't it important to tell voters exactly what you're proposing will cost?
My proposals are suggestions, they're ideas that need to be worked out in detail with folks at the city. This is not something you can do independent before you take office on your own. You have to do this with the team, identify the most effective solutions, and figure out what we can afford to do. So that's what I'm ready to hit the ground running doing. I have a 4-person transition team setting up the structure of the mayor's office, setting up how we're going to populate all the positions that we need in place November 29th. I'll be ready to hit the ground running because I'm already started on it.
That's Carrie Moon. Jenny Durkin, same question. What is the total cost of all the programs you have proposed in new dollars?
This is a great distinction between the two of us. You can look at my website. Every proposal that we've made, we have identified what the current revenues we could use and a range of choices to pay for them. The proposals that we've made, whether it's college tuition or rental vouchers or speeding up transit or community-based solutions to housing, all of them I believe we can pay within current budget amounts.
So no new dollars.
The one thing that I have said in every room, or actually two things. First is, I will not talk about any new taxes until I have the chance to look at and scrub the budget to make sure that we are both collecting the monies we need to and spending it wisely.
But
the
do you not have that information? Again, 3 weeks out from the election when we were trying to evaluate you, do you have that information to say, here's what it would cost?
Again, everything we've proposed, we've said what it will cost and where we're going to get it from.
And whether there'll be taxes, new taxes.
Yes, the one area where I think we may need new taxes, and I may be coming back to the public, and I want to put this marker down, is in the area of addiction services and mental health treatment, particularly for people experiencing homelessness. We don't have enough, and it is so tied to the reality on the streets and our inability to move people out of homelessness and give them the support they need. We need more affordable housing, no question about it. But right now, we simply do not have enough resources to deal with a raging opiate crisis on our streets.
So maybe a dedicated tax to addiction services and mental health treatment.
I'd like to follow up on that. I think it's a bit unrealistic and very top-down that she would come in with solutions already identified without collaborating with council, without collaborating with the experts already on staff at City Hall. And this reminds me of something she said several times at different debates. You know, a bureaucracy will slow roll you every time. And to me, that shows a pretty serious disrespect for the employees who are working for the city of Seattle right now, who want to be part of the solution, who have ideas ready to go, and want to help shape the future of our city, because they've been in public service for years and years, decades for some of them, and we need to include them in shaping these decisions and getting it right.
We absolutely do, and I've included them not only in the discussions informing my policies, but I think it's a reason why they've endorsed me. The largest city employee union has endorsed me after I sat down with the members and talked about my vision for the city and how we would move forward and identify solutions. But I think you're right. Voters have a right to know if we're going to propose certain solutions to the problems. We also have to be thinking about what are they going to cost and where's that money going to come from.
Speaking of, you brought up addiction services. Will there be a place in Seattle in the next 4 years where you can bring in illegal drugs and take them under medical supervision, Carrie Moon?
So the opioid crisis is across the country. It's everywhere. It's heartbreaking. It's the number one cause of death, overdose, for people under 50. This is caused by a lot of factors outside of our control, but we have a duty to our fellow citizens, our fellow neighbors, to provide them a safe way. We need to take a public safety harm reduction approach to this challenge. So I think the cities that have tried this have found that if you have supervised medical care to watch folks and help them stay safe, help them if they overdo it, if they overdose, and you also have to have access to treatment immediately, because the folks who are ready to quit using, if you don't catch them right now when they say they're ready and invite them to come back in 3 weeks, they may never come back.
We have a minute and a half left.
Yes.
Carrie Moon, where will this supervised injection site be?
I think we have to look at the needle exchange program and how they work,
okay,
and we need to spread them throughout the city,
no
working
site
with
yet.
Neighborhoods to site them.
We're looking. Jenny Durkin.
We need these, and they're part of harm reduction. You know, this is the one area where I think people's minds shift when you talk to them, because most people who have talked to me start out saying, I'm not sure about this. Are we endorsing illegal drug use? Then we talk about how harm reduction worked with needle exchange programs and how the same arguments worked against it. And they were proven to be true. They save lives. And now we give the needles to people and say, go in your cars, your parks, etc. We want to have a place where not only there's health care, but the ability to get addiction services. That's the critical component for me.
Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon are running for mayor. Election day is November 7th, and there's a lot more to ask you about, so it's good you'll be doing at least two more debates with KUOW. October 22nd, 5 p.m., the Finney Neighborhood Association with KUOW's David Hyde and Amy Radel. And October 24th at the Starbucks Support Center, that's a debate you will hear live on KUOW and KUOW.org at 6:30 p.m. That's the King Geek Wire City Club debate on October 24th. And I really appreciate both of you coming in and talking with our listeners about the future of Seattle. Carrie Moon, Jenny Durkin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was great.
Thanks for tuning in to KUOW's The Record.